Well, welcome to the Subbrief Podcast, June 2021. Thank you for being a Patreon member and a YouTube member. This is a reward for those of you who support me on those channels. So let's go ahead and get right into it by covering our current deployments. Right now, we have probably the fewest ships deployed in fleets in a long time. Keep in mind, there's a lot more than this, about 56 total ships deployed independently, not in fleets around the world, including submarines. And we won't show those locations on these briefs. But fleet-wide, public knowledge, public record, has four fleets deployed right now. Iwo Jima is going into the Red Sea. She'll eventually be in the Arabian Gulf. We expect her to go to the Persian Gulf, but they don't announce that ahead of time. The Eisenhower Group is already there, and the USS America and Ronald Reagan are working together in the Philippine Sea. We have a couple of really good photos for you. These are all courtesy of USNI, so thank you to them. And check out usni.org if you want more background on these stories that we're talking about today. So here's the Iwo Jima going through the Suez Canal. It's an iconic trip for any sailor to go through this canal. You know, it's one of the major ones that connects the globe's oceans. Here is the U.S. Coast Guard cruiser Hamilton. She's pulling into Malta after spending about 3 months in the Mediterranean, including a few weeks in the Black Sea. She just came out of the Black Sea and is now enjoying some well-deserved shore leave in a beautiful country of Malta. Here's the USS Eisenhower conducting air operations in the Arabian Gulf. She's awaiting for the Iwo Jima to join her before they continue their mission. So this is in that body of water near India, Iran, and Saudi Arabia, Yemen right there. And Carrier Strike Group 5, this is the Carrier Strike Group that is in the Pacific Fleet. They're conducting all sorts of air operations in and around the Philippine Sea, including the South China Sea, and a well-publicized transit in the Taiwan Strait between China and Taiwan. So let's get into the meat and potatoes of what we're going to talk about today. This week, the Secretary of the Navy released his memo about the Navy's budget. Well, what the Navy wants, and the Navy says that it needs, is a next-generation air dominance fighter. This reflects poorly on the service record of the F-35 that they're currently using now. It's too expensive, it doesn't work, it's not reliable, it has a slew of problems. Having said that, when the F-35 works, it's an amazing plane. It will win fights for the United States and everybody else that uses the F-35, but it has a slew of problems, including inconsistency and unreliability to go into those engagements. Okay. So with that, the Navy's looking forward going, we got to go back to the drawing board and make the next generation fighter for our next generation carrier, the Gerald R. Ford. That's one part of what the Navy wants. The second part is the DDG program. We can't even afford to upgrade as many as we want to of the DDGs we have now into the Flight 3 variant of the DDGs. We want to instead build a next generation DDG, which will include more stealth technology and all that. And we have to replace the role that the littoral combat ship was supposed to fill originally, which was to assist our Navy in overseas deployments, whether that's South America or the Asian coast, the Pacific Rim. That mission has failed to, after decades of building the USLCS ships, has just failed to materialize. And we'll get a little bit into that later on. But instead of putting more money in the LCS program, they're just looking ahead. Let's forget about the LCS program and let's just build another ship. And that is a really, probably of the two needs we talked about so far, it's probably the most important one. And the last thing is, they want to retire the Virginia design and design an all-new fast attack submarine, the SSN-X, next generation SSN is what it's being called now. It will eventually be given a name after they get approval and design the program, and it's much farther along. But right now, it's DDG-X and SSN-X for next generation stuff. So out of these three, the SECNAV says we only have money for one of these programs, and that's going to be pretty slim, too. We're going to have to, you know, tap down the expectations a little bit. So we need to ditch two of the three programs. And surprisingly, I know a lot of you would probably expect me to say, well, build the next generation submarine because that's where we're going to win the next war if it's with China or a nation that has a large blue water Navy. That could be Russia, could be a couple other countries around the world. But in the Pacific Rim, where we're spending most of our time and energy as the Navy, that fight is going to be won by submarines, not by ships, because of a number of things, one of which is China's missile advantage. They have an acknowledged by the United States Defense Department of Defense that they have a missile advantage over us. They have hypersonic glide vehicles that can just, you know, hit our targets before our SEWAs even get spun up. They go so fast. So they can easily, with enough weapons, overwhelm our defense system for sure. But I don't want to go down that road just yet. So out of these three, the Navy has to pick one. They have to do it soon. So as soon as they do, we'll let you know what it is. But here's what I would recommend is do not throw more money after the F-35 program and use or try to make the F-35 program more reliable. You know, it's already a very good fighter when it works. Let's focus on not building a new one, because that's going to be real expensive starting over like that. Let's work on reliability of the ones we have now. For the SSNX, the Virginia was designed to be modular. So just if you want to improve the Virginia, make a new module for it. You don't have to go back to the drawing board ever again on American submarines, because we have a good core modular design that was intended and sold to the American public as, hey, we're just going to continue to upgrade these modules. And eventually it will be a completely different submarine, but one module at a time. All right. So we don't need to go to the drawing board and design a new submarine. That's going to be prohibitively expensive. We can just continue to improve the modules, replace the modules with new modules on our current modular submarine design. That leaves the next generation destroyer. So the same argument could be made about the destroyers we have now. The Arleigh Burke class destroyer is what I'm talking about. There's multiple variants of this destroyer. The most recent variant is the most capable, but we can't even afford to retrofit, you know, the older designs into the new design, because that's really expensive. It might make more sense because of that redesign cost to just go ahead and build the next generation destroyer and make it more competitive. For one, give it some weapons, which was the Achilles heel of the LCS program, is that it was unable to attack or defend. It was an observation platform on the water that could go 40 knots. It was really fast. But it didn't have any real capability other than being in existence, you know, being an observation platform, a picket ship, essentially, which was not its design, but that's what it's being used as, the ones that we have built. So I think going back to the drawing board and building a whole new destroyer based on the very robust Arleigh Burke design and building those at a rate of two or three a year is the way to go forward. So work on reliability of the F-35, fix that, build a better module for the Virginia if you feel you need to. The Virginia class as it stands right now, which I believe is module or version 6, is really good. Really good. It doesn't really need much improvement, but continuing to improve is kind of our thing. What needs the most work out of these three categories is our ships. We need better warfighting ships. So I think spending the money on the DDG-X program is the way to go forward. We'll see what the Navy actually does. They may not. Oh, also, one thing that wasn't even brought up and was shot down immediately by the SecNav without it being brought up is he says, cancel that nuclear cruise missile program. We're not going to spend a dime on that thing because it's a waste of money. You know, we're not going to be using nuclear cruise missiles in any conflict other than pure global nuclear war, which is not, after that, it won't matter anyway what cost what. So a nuclear cruise missile program is just a money bucket, a money hole that we're just going to throw money into with no actual employment ever intended of that weapon. Plus, it is a little bit tempting. You don't want to make it too easy for our political leaders to use relatively small nuclear weapons and, you know, and give them that temptation. Staying conventional is important to global survival. Okay, so we don't want to give that new president that just got reelected in the future, no matter what party is, doesn't matter. We don't want him to have the temptation to be like, well, it's measured in kilotons, you know. No, once it's nuclear, it's on. It's on after that. We don't want to go down that road. All right, so let's take a look real quick at our budget. I know there's a lot of numbers here. You guys don't need to worry about that. Look at the size of the shapes of the boxes down at the bottom of the chart. That is, each box is the relative size amount of the total budget going towards that program. So you can see that aircraft take as much money in current employment and investment and maintenance and design and development as both ships and submarines combined. Yeah, this is why going after a new next generation airplane is a bad idea, because that cost is just going to continue to increase. They need to spend the money that we're spending now, which is $670 billion with a B, on making that F-35 more reliable and keeping it in the air longer. You know, they need to get more mileage out of that. The ships and submarines are coming in at $300 and $200 billion each. And then you can see all the other programs behind it. But the total budget of money being spent right now, as this is being recorded and you're watching this, is $1.7 trillion with a T to maintain our military for this year alone. That's an insane amount of money. Okay, and where is most of that money going? This is really what shocked me. Look at the Navy's cut of the total amount of money spent this year. It's over half is being spent by the Navy. And a lot of this is being done in and around the Philippine Sea. Those deployments to the Philippine Sea are extremely expensive in operational dollars. You know, not just manpower and everything else that goes into that. The cost of having our presence as much as it is over in the Pacific Rim is really expensive. All right, so let's take a look at the littoral combat ship, the Freedom Class. They finally have acknowledged that it has a high-speed clutch problem. The Navy has told Lockheed Martin, who designed the gear mechanisms for the LCS class, that they're not going to receive or take custody, commission, essentially, another LCS Freedom class ship. I should back up. The LCS has two classes, Independence and Freedom. They're two different designs, okay? Well, the Freedom class is what we're talking about right now. They have a problem with their high-speed clutch. This ship is extremely fast. It can go up to 40-plus knots. That is, it's capable of outrunning some older torpedoes, to give you an idea of how fast that is. This thing is a speedboat. It's one of its best traits is its speed, but it tears up its gears every time it shifts into high gear. It has a gear shift much like your car does, an automatic transmission, and there is a problem in that transmission that the Navy says is a software problem and can be fixed with software. The Lockheed Martin, who built it, is blaming the sailors for not operating it right. Well, the sailors aren't naval engineers. They don't design these things. They follow procedures. Those procedures are written by the people who build these engines, which is Lockheed Martin. So Lockheed Martin, by blaming the sailor, are unintentionally blaming their own procedure for not being correct. So it's either a software problem or the procedure's wrong, and everybody knows it's actually a mechanical engineering error. They made a mistake designing it. That's the real answer. Nobody wants to admit that, because that would require gutting every one of these LCS Freedom classes anyway. I don't know about the Independence. Hopefully it's not the Independence as well, because that would be that's the entire class. Gutting it out and putting a new, if it's a mechanical problem, putting a new gearbox in this thing. And that would be, at that point, you might as well decommission it. And that's what they're doing. We've already, we're decommissioning the first of four of the LCSs. Those are already going away because the upgrade cost, not counting this gearbox problem, but all the upgrade costs that are going into it to make the LCS useful to the United States Navy is way too high. So these ships that were just commissioned in 2008, 2010, 2012, 2014, only about 7 years ago, are already scheduled for decommissioning this year, 2021. That's one of the shortest lifespans of any warship ever from any country. Just a couple of years. That shows you what a colossal failure this is. And the people who defend this program simply are wrong, or they're lying. You know, and if they have skin in the game, if they're making money off of this design, if they're the designers, if they're the shipyard, if they're the shipyard workers that make their living off this, I understand why they're defending the program, because it's their livelihood. So you can't fault those people. But the reality is, this thing is a colossal waste of money, has almost no capability other than it being present in a fleet. They do have subclasses. So there's like four classes, four jobs for each one of these. And each one can only do one because they're modules. So you have an ASW class. So it's got a really strong, powerful sonar. It can do towed arrays. You know, it searches for submarines. Well, that's a capability our fleet already has and does really well. So we didn't need an LCS for ASW. But it can do that ASW job in very shallow waters. Okay, so that's one of the jobs. The other one is mine warfare. Mine warfare, probably how it was intended to be used, is to have one of these ships with mine warfare capability, mine detection capability, and to go ahead of the fleet and sweep for mines. Okay, but because it has almost no self-defense capability other than a Sea Whiz that can easily be defeated by a hypersonic glide vehicle that China has a bunch of, it's just going to be a sitting duck out there in front of the fleet. It's going to have to, extra resources, probably air assets, are going to be swarming all over that thing trying to protect it from being attacked in a shooting war. So even its most capable module design, in my opinion, which is the mine sweeping technology, the mine sweeping module, makes it basically a picket ship in a huge target that can't defend itself. It relies on other assets to defend it. Okay. The third is special operations. It works with special forces and supporting them through helo ops. It's got a big helo landing pad on the back of it, and it's got some inflatable ribs, you know, reinforced hull. Inflatable boats that special forces can use to go in and out of shores. And this shallow draft ship can get very close to land and support these things. So, you know, as a special operations ship, it is pretty valuable, but as soon as it's detected, it's going to go away. And as a special operations ship, it can't operate with the fleet. It would have to separate itself from the fleet to conduct those operations, because we already have fleet ships called LHAs and LHSs or LHDs that support Marines and special operations already. So again, another redundant program for this LCA. The ship doesn't really have a purpose in 2020 in this decade. And it was designed in the early 2000s to be the ship of the future, to fight the future war, and it's done nothing except cost us immense amounts of money. And look how many we've built. Look at this list. It's insane. We continue to build these today. This is the insanity. We are continuing to build these today, even though we're decommissioning them at the same time, because they're so expensive to upgrade and maintain and operate, and they're useless to the fleet. They just add another ship to the count number. That's it. It's such a disaster. We need to stop this program right now. And there's no signs of that happening. Yeah, there's too many other interested parties in keeping this money train going. This train wreck of a failure is beyond me. And it doesn't stop there. I have to look at our own submarine force. Look what just came out. The estimated planning cost of our new ballistic missile submarine, the Columbia class, that's going to be coming out in the 2030s, the planning to draw the picture of the submarine and the piping tab and connect all the systems, not actually building it, but just planning it, making sure it all fits in the hull, all those important bits. $6.5 billion is how much it's going to cost to plan the submarine. And then construction can begin, and construction costs always go over budget, especially with the first hull. But the planning cost of being $6.5 billion is criminal. Absolutely criminal. I don't care how long this takes you to build. Let's say it's a 10-year plan. That's freaking what, you know, $600 million a year just for planning? It's so expensive, it simply boggles my mind. It doesn't make sense to me why planning the submarine cost that much. Nearly over a third of the entire cost of the program is simply in planning. This is a good argument for federalizing the defense industry right here, because we could be paying these designers as federal employees instead of the exorbitant cost we're paying defense contractors. We could save a lot of money, certainly billions of dollars, if these were federal employees and not defense contractors. I would love to see the justification for $6.5 billion to plan a ballistic missile submarine. that I understand is complicated. I lived inside these things for years. I know the Ohio class inside and out, all compartments, all systems. I understand that this is not something you simply draw and design, but I also understand that it's not $6.5 billion to design a new one. Okay? That's beyond the pale. And so these numbers are going to Congress for approval. Congress must push back. Even though their constituents work at the shipyard and their constituents are going to be benefiting from this money and those constituents support them and vote for them. Okay. And that's the relationship here, but we have to have someone on the congressional side that looks at this and says, wait, what? And have them itemize this cost. Cause this makes no sense to me. The construction cost continues from $6.5 to $12 billion. That's certainly going to go over that budget for sure. And then they add some other gaps, if you will, for order change costs, because every time you change a design after you've begun, it delays the project and also adds to the cost. And as you can see, the actual equipment and the ordnance itself, which is the missiles, which, by the way, we lease from the Department of Energy. The Navy doesn't actually own their own warheads. The Department of Energy keeps custody of those. We just lease those as we have them. That's how that works. Yeah, so like the majority of the submarine, in terms of equipment cost is relatively small compared to the planning. And I just don't accept the argument that it's that complicated to cost that much. I reject that premise. All right. So like I said, we're going to help pay for this. We're going to help free up some money by decommissioning four littoral combat ships. We're expecting that savings to be about, if we round up a little bit and we give the Navy a little extra credit, about $200 million, which in a program like the Columbia class SSBN, that's the design itself is $6.5 billion. This is a drop in the bucket. But this is just another example of why the LCS program hurt the United States so much financially and capability operational wise as well. We got hit on both ends. We spent way too much money on these LCS ships that we continue to build and pay for, and we don't get anything back from it except increasing debt. And I feel bad for the sailors on these ships. I'm not saying anything bad about the personnel. Officers and enlisted deserve the utmost respect. The failure here is in the initial concept of an LCS ship to begin with. What in the world did they want? What kind of enemy are we fighting in that we need a littoral combat ship? Okay, so that answer is small countries with coastlines, Vietnam, Philippines, Yemen, maybe Somalia, maybe we're operating over there with these, but we have the same capability in spades already in the Arleigh Burke. Mine detection, special warfare operations with, the helipad, the communication capability that already exists. The LCS didn't bring anything to the table, nothing. How did this happen? How did this get approved? I don't know. But we are decommissioning them. Now, if we would simply stop building them, that would be great. And then we could just decommission the rest of them, maybe forget about this whole program. So at the time of this recording, USS Laboon, which is a Arleigh Burke class destroyer, is entering the Black Sea. She entered it on June 11th, 2021. And that's a picture of her doing that. And the reason why I'm shifting gears now into this operational is that even though as we're spending exuberant amounts of money that we really can't afford on systems that don't work and submarines that won't be here for 10 years, we are continuing to provocatively sail the seas in the Freedom of the Seas style. In areas that we really have no national interest. We may have allied interest, but not national interest. The Black Sea is one of them. Who do we have in the Black Sea that we're really helping? I understand the very first answer that I get whenever I ask that is Turkey, right? Turkey is a NATO member, but Turkey has changed a lot in the last 8 or 10 years, and they've really called into question their loyalty as they continue to use Russian Federation developed and Chinese developed systems that are not compatible with our systems at all. So, if they're going to be on our side, they should at least be able to talk to us. A lot of times they can't. So let's talk about China real quick, because that's where we're spending most of our time and money in the Navy. Just this week, Congress got a special report about the China's military, the People's Liberation Army specifically, but in general. One of the things that I want to point out to you that came out of this study that was released to Congress and is made public, everybody can read this if they want to, are the Science and Military Strategy. This is a book, sort of. It's a publication in China for the Chinese government to talk about the next China war. China hasn't been in a formal shooting war since 1979, so they don't have any recent combat experience, despite having some border skirmishes in the recent years, especially with India and other nations. Actual shooting war hasn't happened since 1979. So what does China expect to do is really what this report does. And they're building for four different categories, four different types of wars. One is a large-scale, high-intensity defensive war against a hegemonic nation. Well, guess who is the only hegemonic nation left after the collapse of the British Empire? And that's the United States. Yeah. So their number one concern, their number one preparation is to fight a defensive war against the United States. Their other preparations are the reinvasion and a reunion of Taiwan, which I want to point out, if I can bring my cursor up here, you see how in this United States government made graph, we make Taiwan the same color as China, implying that Taiwan is China, okay, just like China always claims that it's been. But whenever we calculate the missile ranges, we do not include the island of Taiwan or the nation of Taiwan there. So this is giving us mixed signals. You know, do we have a current treaty with Taiwan to defend them if they are invaded by China? But yet, whenever we do graphs like this, we just lump them in with China. I don't know if that's probably an oversight, but I just want to point that out. So the other things that they're preparing for is a limited border war, small scale war with places like, Vietnam and India, Mongolia, things like that. Now, if they do go to war with India, that's not going to be small scale. India is growing their defensive capabilities at a rapid rate, both Army, Air Force, Navy, the whole shebang. And they're a nuclear power, too. India is. So not only is China, so is India. And India has promised that if there's ever open conflict between China and themselves, and this may just be rhetoric, who knows, that they will go full nuclear against China. That's how much those two nations are in conflict right now. Obviously, there's no shooting conflict, but India is ready. And India has been threatening China with, you know, global reprisal if they end up going to war. So hopefully that doesn't happen. I bring that up because we're not the only game in town when we're talking about China. China is aggressively expanding its influence and, you know, de facto claiming territories that traditionally belong to other countries. I'm speaking specifically of the Paracel Islands and the Spratly Islands in the South China Sea. Those islands have long been in dispute, and a lot of them are uninhabited because they're so small. But there's a lot of valuable resources under the water there, namely oil. And no one's really had the technology or the equipment until recently to exploit those areas. One way that it is exploited and has been for decades is fishing, though. Fishing is a huge market in every nation, but especially Vietnam, Philippines, and China. And the fishermen are often coming into conflict with each other of, is this water, you know, Chinese fishing area, or is it Vietnamese? And that continues to be in conflict to today. Wow, my brain short-circuited there for a second. Sorry about that. So this is the capability and missile ranges of the Chinese army. They have a carrier targeting ballistic missile now that is, you know, it falls from space like a meteor. So even if you shoot it down, it's still coming at you because it has so much inertia. and apparently it's guided too. So even if you're moving the carrier, it doesn't mean you're going to get away from it. And it's nuclear capable, even though it doesn't have to be. But this gives you an idea of the conventional ranges of their missiles, conventional strikes. Ballistic missile strikes obviously are nearly global. Not quite, but pretty close to the global. But they can strike any nation within these rings with conventional warfare. All right, so that's going to be it for us this month. This is the podcast for June 2021. Thank you very much for supporting me. Here are the department heads and division officers for June. Thanks a lot again, and we will see you Oh, I should make the announcement now. We're going to begin researching the next sub-brief lecture right now, as soon as I get off of this. And it's going to be the Charlie Class SSGN, which I was shocked to find out from a fan that I hadn't done that one yet. I should have done the Charlie back when I was doing the Echo in the November. So, yeah, we're going to do the Charlie now, too. All right, so you can look forward to that coming probably around July 1st to July 4th in those in that first week of July. Okay, it's going to be a large lecture. I think there's 19 or 20 different submarines, and we're going to go over each one of those. So it's going to be a big lecture. So look forward to putting that together for you. We're going to start doing that today, and I'll see you guys then. Thanks for watching, everybody. This is the Subbrief Podcast. Bye bye.